Hey friends, we've got an incredible event coming your way on May 7th through 9th. We're so excited to co-host the Responsive Nonprofit Summit alongside our friends and partners in growing generosity, Virtuous.
This free virtual event is an opportunity to dig deeper into the challenges you're facing and discover how responsive fundraising can unlock a world of possibility.
You can join Becky and me on the conversation stage to hear good humans talk about how they're tackling the retention crisis, they're managing change, building donor journeys that grow engagement, and being whole leaders in this work. You really don't want to miss this.
Register today at weareforgood.com/RNS. We'll see you there, friends.
Hey friend, let me ask you something. Why do some social impact brands thrive while so many others fail to get traction, build support for their cause, and make meaningful progress toward their mission?
Our friend Eric Ressler over at Cosmic explores this question in his new brilliant podcast, Designing Tomorrow. Each episode is a deep dive into the strategies, mindsets, and behaviors that top social impact brands use to play and win in the attention economy.
It's not just a podcast, it's this modern playbook for navigating our rapidly changing, digitally driven world that you can use to reach your true impact potential. And new episodes are dropping every Tuesday.
Follow and subscribe to Designing Tomorrow on your favorite podcast platform or catch the video versions on YouTube. We've dropped the links in this episode's description. We'll be listening right alongside you.
Welcome back to Mental Health Week presented by GiveButter. It's day 5, and today we're sitting down with one of our dear friends, Lynn Wester, to hear her personal mental health journey. We're so glad you're here. Hey, I'm John.
And I'm Becky.
And this is the We Are For Good podcast.
Nonprofits are faced with more challenges to accomplish their missions and the growing pressure to do more, raise more, and be more for the causes that improve our world.
We're here to learn with you from some of the best in the industry, bringing the most innovative ideas, inspirational stories, all to create an impact uprising.
So welcome to the good community. We're nonprofit professionals, philanthropists, world changers, and rabid fans who are striving to bring a little more goodness into the world.
So let's get started. Hey, Becky.
Hi, John.
How are you?
Well, we have our first ever repeat guest on the We Are For Good podcast. And
who's also like one of our favorite people in the entire world.
She has been one of our favorite people for years, long before we had this company. And I want to tell people why. It's because back in the day when we were working in nonprofit shops, Lynn Wester, who is like the donor relations global queen in the non sector. If you don't know her name, you need to go to donorrelationsguru.com and go check out all of her incredible resources, her story. But I just remember her as being, I don't even know if I want to call it the dissenting opinion in the room, but she would frequently, you know, stand, raise her hand when I was in conferences or workshops with her and say the thing was the most disruptive thing, the thing that I was thinking I was not brave enough to say back in the day. And to me, she's one of these original voices of innovation, disruption, doing things better, and building community alongside all of that.
I think you perfectly summated Lynn Wester because I felt the same way. I mean, always admired her from afar. And she is like, from a consultant perspective, she does it all. Yeah. And I always looked up to her because she had this side hustle. She had this full-time job, but she served and she gave so freely. And it really laid the groundwork. I don't know if I ever told you this, Lynn, but you laid the groundwork for, man, I want to do that in our own way. And seeing you on stage and just how people connected with you and served and wanted to serve more because of you. So
Lynn's just been in the nonprofit sector for a very long time. She's worn many hats. She has thousands of organizations that she's worked with over the year. And when you look at Donor Relations Guru and the company that it is, I think you don't know the story behind it because it just is such a well-oiled machine. There are so many people that follow it. But Lynn said something to us a couple months ago, and we were talking about mental health and we were talking about self-care. And I'm kind of sharing a little bit of my mental health story that I shared on the podcast this week. And she said, oh, yeah, I have kind of a similar journey to that. And we said, would you be willing to share it? And she said, yes. And so the bravest person in the room, you know, 5 to 10 years ago when we met her, is going to be one of the bravest people on this podcast. And so Lynn, welcome to our show.
Thanks so much. I'm so happy to be back. I feel like I'm one of those regulars on Jimmy Carson, hopefully. And, you know, we'll sit there and eat popcorn and peanuts or something together. I have so much I want to share. And I think it's important to use our platforms to share both the good and the challenge of our lives. I've been in fundraising for 21 years now. I used to have a career at Disney and, left that and finally found what I wanted to do in my life. To find your vocation is really important, but it hasn't always been easy. I never knew I was going to be an entrepreneur. That's for certain. I've worked at Rollins College and Hopkins Medicine and NYU and Yeshiva University and North Carolina, Charlotte. But the work I do with organizations has really been the work that has fueled me to this day. But running my business wasn't a clear path. It wasn't, it hasn't been easy. And it's also something that I don't think we talk about enough in terms of the journey to that. Or, you know, you guys say that I was the one in the back of the room being the disruptor, when really it was me trying to cope with my reality in the nonprofit world and higher ed fundraising. And then what I saw on the stage, not being all the way authentic sometimes, or I was asking the tough questions, because at conferences, we would put on these nice outfits and we'd get our nails and hair done and we'd put on our best, you know, foot forward. And we'd say, here's what we do here. And here's all of our success. But I didn't all the time hear the challenges or the failures. And so when I got up to speak, I always made sure that people knew that I struggled with the same things they struggle with. And I think that's been very advantageous in our consulting practice as well, is that we've failed and we've failed really well. And coping with my mental health has been a journey for me. I have an anxiety disorder. I've had it. I've been diagnosed for more than 15 years, but I've had anxiety my entire life. The doctors never called it anxiety. I'd have a weak tummy, or I'd get sick when it was stressful times, or there were a lot of physical manifestations of my anxiety, but nobody ever said, hey, you should go talk to a psychologist. Until I found a really great doctor who said, I've run every single test on you and I don't know why you haven't eaten for 11 days. But I couldn't keep, what ended up happening is I couldn't keep down food or water, and ended up at a GI doctor going, what is wrong with me? There has to be something wrong with me. And after having many, many uncomfortable tests, I had a doctor who said, you know, I think this is your mind-body connection. And as a person who never grew up in a household of, my parents are not hippies, they're in their 80s. And that whole mind-body connection, like, I don't know about my chakras and other people's chakras and stuff, but that kind of, my dad would call it heebie-jeebie stuff, didn't enter into our household much. And it's even been a journey of my parents to learn how to deal with a child who as an adult has an anxiety disorder. And, you know, it goes all the way back for me. So I was a gifted and talented kid, but they didn't figure that out until I was in third grade. So I skipped and got kicked out of kindergarten, and then I got skipped out of third grade. And so you end up being 2 years younger than everybody else in your school. You're super, super smart, but you have no emotional coping capabilities. And then you end up at a university at 16, and you're smart as heck, have no coping skills, none of that stuff. And then you're always the person overachieving in the workplace, and you're supposed to cope with that. And so you end up coping, but not really dealing with any of that. And so it wasn't until the stress of the job caught up with me. I was working full time and speaking. So I'm dealing with it and I'm on a journey with it. I'm on a tropical island because of it.
We're going to talk about that. I love how humanizing and vulnerable you are to share that, because I think the lens that people see out front, you know, it took a while for that girl to emerge as her true self. And I absolutely applaud you saying that we are too often in nonprofit talking about our successes, but how in the world can we fix the things that are broken in our industry if we don't talk about them? And so that is why we wanted to have an entire week dedicated to talking about the thing that nobody is talking about, because we wanted to socialize mental health so we can break down the stigma. We want you to see we don't have it all together. I don't have it all together. Lynn doesn't have it all together. And the other thing that I want to lift out that's really, really important about what you said is that these things don't just happen. Sometimes they are such a slow build and we don't even know that the build is coming. I wonder if you could give us just a little bit of background. You've given us, you know, some taste here about your nonprofit journey, you know, coming out of college, getting into nonprofit, and what led to sort of this story that we're about to unpack.
Yeah, I think for me, when I came into higher education and nonprofit work, I found, so I was the kid that never knew what I wanted to be when I grew up. Whereas my brother had it all figured out, straight line engineer, like computer engineer, like he got it. And that was always messy for me, not knowing and being interested in everything and curious about everything. When I found fundraising and I found donor relations more specifically, because I tried to be a frontline fundraiser and learned quickly that frontline fundraiser wasn't for me because I couldn't control the outcome. I could do my job perfectly and a donor still wouldn't give. And I could not handle not being in control, which is part of my anxiety, right? Like I need to be in control at all times. I need to feel like I have a handle on it. And so the process-driven work of donor relations with its big fatty heart in the middle allowed me to tap into the work that really fueled me, that I got to make people feel good. But in the higher ed world, in nonprofit world, I ran into so much bureaucracy and politics. We had that at Disney, but it was to a heightened level. If you brought a good idea to the table, but you were the wrong person that brought the idea, then your idea wasn't listened to. Or if someone higher up on the food chain wanted your idea, you had to give it to them. And you couldn't take credit for your own work, or you couldn't be competitive. And I go home and think about why I was unsuccessful. And that carried on into business and imposter syndrome and standing in front of the room, and you're on the stage in front of 300 fundraisers. So how it manifested for me is, unfortunately, I would get sick every time I spoke in public. I love public speaking. I have a gift for it. And I didn't realize that my adrenaline rush, even though it was excitement, was part of an anxiety issue. And so getting my head wrapped around turning my anxiety into excitement and, you know, learning how to either not eat before or control, you know, my protein intake, or just, you know, how to deal with the fact that every time I get up in front of a room, it's the most amazing feeling in the world. It's also the scariest damn thing, you know, like as a keynote speaker, there's nothing that it's the thing I miss the most about my former life. I don't miss the travel. I miss an audience looking in my eyes and laughing along with me, or nodding and smiling, or having that moment of, oh, I feel the same way. I miss that terribly. My body doesn't miss the huge hill. Now afterwards I shake and I have to be somewhere quiet and small after I do a big speech, and I need to eat some protein and drink some water and let the adrenaline rush.
I do that too. And I had no idea that I've never in my life connected the physical to the event. And so I'm even thinking of you who are listening right now. I want you to think of a moment, and this is the one that popped up in my head, of a board meeting at your organization, and all of your board members are talking. Your CEO is there. Your executive director is there. I can remember several times where board members would be either having dissenting opinions, or they would be completely in consensus, and I would be thinking in my head, oh no, this is not the way to go. And I would have to pump myself up. And I'm a pretty bold and fearless person. And I still would have to pump myself up. And I would say the thing, and I would say what I needed to say. And then afterward, I would get the shakes. too. And I have had those shakes and I have never connected the anxiety. So thank you. I mean, for even bringing these things up, it is the adrenaline and I had no idea what to call it. So yeah, I'm really appreciating and aligning and connecting with so much of what you're saying.
When I was a young staff member and a boss would send me an email saying, come into my office, I would break out into hives. My stomach would go into my throat and I would start getting sweaty, thinking I was going to get fired because I'd spent so much time as a dissenter in the HR chairs apologizing for people's feelings.
Yes.
That it initially caused me anxiety.
Thank you for kind of sharing some of these experiences because I can remember sitting in the audience looking at you thinking, she's got her complete act together and is owning the stage. And I don't know what point of the journey it was when I was there. It's probably 10 years ago. But I just think, Lynn, what was the moment, or maybe it wasn't a definitive moment, but when did you wake up and say, something's wrong, like I need help? Like, and how did you seek it out? Who did you turn to? What was that moment like in your life?
I've had two low points. So the unfortunate thing about getting sick is sometimes can't stop spasming. And so I went 11 days without eating food and keeping it down. And I ended up in the hospital with a GI specialist telling me, if you keep speaking, you're going to die. And he's like, you're tearing apart your innards. So we got to get control of this. After we ran all the tests and everything, it's a combination of physical and mental. So he gave me a pill that would, it was my magic pill for years. For 5 years, I took the pill every time I spoke or every time I had an anxiety attack. And it was a combination of an antispasmodic and a Valium. But I also started seeking professional help and got diagnosed with an anxiety disorder. And I go weekly to a psychologist who I love. And now we do it remotely even. But there have been years when I don't seek help. So in my business, the business kind of got bigger than me. And I had a ton of imposter syndrome and I wasn't taking care of myself. I was traveling 300 nights a year. Whoa. On the road because whenever somebody wanted me to speak or a client wanted me, I never said no. And I would fly from Baltimore to LA in one day. And then I'd be in New Jersey the next day and in Florida the next day with no care or concern for myself. And at that point, I had no time to take care of myself. So I wasn't seeing a psychologist. The business was booming. I had my first $1 million year, like everything on the outside. I was keynoting NACTA with 15,000 people. And you would think, oh my God, she's it. You know, like she is it. She's hot stuff. And you know what? When I do go on the stage, I black out and I go into the zone and I'm on. And you know what? It does feel great. And it is my home. But they don't think about all the times when I'm home alone, not home alone. I don't have anybody I'm dating because it's hard to date on the road and have a relationship. And I'm alone in a Days Inn, you know, on some college campus eating Panera takeout, because that's what was available. It's not the glamorous life that people think it is. You know, I'm not in private jets and I'm on regional carriers, you know, and, you know, wearing the same dress 3 days every week because I come home to do laundry. And a couple of years ago, I ended up having a nervous breakdown. It was a series of panic attacks or anxiety attacks, as they call them, that led me to have to take 2 weeks and just stop what I was doing. It actually happened 2 days after my birthday, where I should have been happy. It happened around my group team meeting, where the people that I love and cherish the most were around me. It happened in Vegas, which is also, I came off of a vacation for my birthday. I hadn't been taking care of myself. I was overstimulated. Our business meetings caused me the most anxiety of anything because I'm trying to plan for what people are going to do. I have, you know, 11 families counting on me for money. And I had a break and I lashed out. I wasn't myself. I cried uncontrollably for no reason. Like there were so many symptoms. Like I didn't eat. I couldn't get happy no matter what happened. I mean, I even came here to Cayman 3 days before. I couldn't get happy. I saw my favorite people in the world. I couldn't get happy. And so we put a stop to everything for a couple of weeks and I got myself help and I reached out to a professional and did some very intense work for those 2 weeks. My friends called my parents and they sent me home on a direct flight to Austin, and I had to take care of myself. But it every day I have to work at it. Every single day I work at it. You know, my mom and dad, who are in their 80s, I love them and they're really supportive. But sometimes when my mom will say, "Are you better now?" It's not like that. And so like when Simone Biles decided to choose herself, I spent that day down, like in tears, crying about it, because I understand what it's like. People are like, "Well, all she needs to do is go out there and do what she does every day." And I'm like, first of all, she could die flipping in the air. First of all, I can't even do a somersault.
Yeah.
And this woman is like 3 feet in the air, twisting and flipping and stuff. And she lost where she was in space. Can you imagine how terrifying that is? And you've got the whole world staring at you going, "We're waiting for you to win your gold medal." For me, I had nothing. I had people who said, "We can't, you know, we need you here to solve our fundraising problem, or we need you to speak at our conference." And I couldn't handle the stress of that plus my life. So I cried a lot with her and for her. And I'm so grateful to her for talking about it and others who have been talking about it, because it can be you can't function. Like I had somebody feed me, you know, like people are like, "But wait, you're overweight." Yes. Well, I don't eat when I'm sad. I don't eat. I do the opposite of eating. And so it's really interesting all the ways that the anxiety manifests itself. So a year ago in December, I left the States because I was not feeling well. And thank God I had my doctor and my friends and my family saying, I knew I was going back down a not self-care path. Instead of doing everything, I started not doing everything because I was trapped in my apartment. I was scared of human beings. I didn't want to leave my apartment because I was scared I was going to get COVID. And whether or not that fear feels real to anyone else, for a person with an anxiety disorder not to be able to control the environment they're in, and to think that, as I have comorbidity, and so to think that I would die of this virus, or that it would take my parents, that was an everyday occurrence. And I started feeling unwell mentally. And so I moved to an island where there is no, I literally relocated 3,000 miles away to support my anxiety and to support my mental health, so that I could support the families that count on me, so that I could be, and I'm happy. I'm happy. And I'm, you know, I had already made the decision not to go back until January of 2022, if then, but I left everything I knew and moved to a foreign country to not ever have another nervous breakdown.
Taking a quick pause in today's convo to thank our Mental Health Week presenting sponsor, GiveButter. GiveButter powers more than 35,000 good causes with their end-to-end fundraising solution. And we love it because it's completely free. GiveButter powers missions around the country and those on the front lines of destigmatizing mental health, like NAMI Nevada. Throughout the pandemic, quarantine and social distancing requirements were contributing to a massive increase in anxiety and depressive disorders across the state. So NAMI Nevada put together an innovative fundraiser powered by GiveButter to introduce the greater Nevada community to all the ways they can move forward, no matter the circumstances they're dealing with. They eclipsed their goal on their crowdfunding campaign and shared how much they love GiveButter's ease of use and the power of its human-to-human connectivity to grow their impact. You can watch the full success story at the link in our show notes or learn more at givebutter.com.
Okay, I want to pause here because I need to make a couple observations about this. Because I am bobbleheading right now because of what you're saying. And Julie is texting me and saying she is learning so much about herself right now. And I think anyone who's hardwired to be anxious, to take care of people, to nurture and make the thing grow, we're just going to take all that on and we're going to take it in and we're going to bury it. And I remember having this conversation with you in December and right before you were moving to the Caymans. And I remember we were talking about how people would likely perceive that. And I want to like hit that square between the nose, because what you just said is the most important thing right there. And it's something that I've learned about myself too in self-care. It's when you start to feel those triggers, you have to make a massive change. And it was your moment where you stood up and you said, "I don't care what anybody else thinks. I don't care what your opinions or your judgment is. And in my mind, I'm like sitting in the audience again as you're doing this and you're standing on stage and you're saying the disruptive thing. And as someone who also had a nervous breakdown, I call it losing my marbles. I think in some ways it was a great thing for me because life became so clear and you start to understand what those triggers are. So the thing I want to say to you right now is, thank you for doing that. Thank you for making that public. Thank you for giving so many people permission to do the thing that makes them the healthiest version of themselves. And if it's going to a Caribbean island, great. Saying I'm not going to compete in this Olympics, great. If it's me saying I'm taking 3 months off of work and I'm going to take short-term disability, great. Everyone needs to find the thing that is going to help you get back to the healthiest version of yourself.
And it doesn't, like, my decision to move to a COVID-free environment, because I'm still scared of the judgment. You know, I also gave up being able to see my family and friends and all kinds of other things. And I gave up Taco Bell, which really hurts me to my core because I miss a cheesy gordita crunch every now and again. I joke about that, but to say the other steps are things like going to Pilates, or I have a sacred hour every week. Shannon, my assistant, my concierge, who is kind of like a second mom to me, takes care of me. She knows that my doctor hour can never be moved. Like, that's my doctor hour. I'm going to get my medication, and my medication is talking to him, and I get my root beer or I get my Sprite because I don't drink caffeine, and because that helps with my anxiety not to have caffeine. And so, you know, that's the thing. So it could be as simple as call your employee assistance program. You could say, you know what, maybe donor relations isn't the life for me, or maybe I don't want to frontline fundraise. I want to be in donor relations. Or maybe it's, I need to take FMLA and get a hold of myself. Or maybe it's, I really enjoy spending time with my kids, so I need to find a job or a career path that lets me do that. Or I want to be a gardener the rest of my life, and I want to leave this career behind. All of that. You don't have to do big things. It could be, you know, for me, self-care is in the small steps that add up to the big stuff. And the other thing about self-care is setting compassion. Like, I'm not very good at compassion for myself. I get frustrated with myself. I held myself to unrealistic standards all the time. But now it's, I'm going to end my day Fridays at 2:30 PM because then I can go to happy hour. It starts at 4:00. I can go to the grocery store here, or I can go put my feet in the water, or I'm going to go swim. Like, all those little self-care things, or even here on island where I do have a very good time, saying to my friends, I'm cool. I'm going to go watch Ted Lasso for the 44th time, or I'm going to go Real Housewives it up or something like that. Self-care doesn't have to be radical, but it can be. And you need to, like, I just would say to people to give yourself the grace to, even if it's telling a friend, hey, I don't feel very good, you know, or reaching out to someone. I mean, you can reach out to me. I'll listen. I'm not a professional, so I'm going to tell you to go to a professional, though. If I burn myself and I go to the doctor and fix my burn, there's nothing wrong with it. But if my brain is burnt and I go to the doctor and try to get help for it, all of a sudden I'm a weirdo because I have a psychologist or a cat or a dog or, you know, whatever else coping mechanism there is. And it's not weird. It really helps. And the other thing that, frankly, I struggle with as a business owner, and this is something my donor relations guru teammates are going to laugh at, is worth. What is an hour of my time worth? What is my advice worth? I tend to be very cheap in my estimations, and it's the biggest mistake I ever made in my business, was undervaluing myself. I used to go on site for 3 days and charge them $500 plus travel. And there were consultants out there putting in receipts for the cola they got out of the vending machine. And I'm like trying to eat Taco Bell to not charge the university for what I really want, which is a steak. I got a steak taco. And, you know, if I got extra sour cream and guac, I would never pass that on because I didn't want them to have to pay for it. Just and not valuing the worth of the beating that my body would take flying back and forth across the world. Not valuing my time. So like when they would pay for me to be on site, you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner on site too, and not saying, I need to have dinner on my own.
Thank you for everything that you're sharing. I think I relate hearing the burden of family and families relying on you. And I feel like an exhale, like I'm sitting across with such a dear friend that I just so appreciate you being vulnerable and showing that it's okay and just creating space to have this conversation. Thank you so much. I don't know where to go next, but I just think boundaries. I start to hear about boundaries and kind of what you're saying, and you've figured out ways to stand up that conversation with your clients, with your team, with all the other different inputs in your life. Could you talk about what that's looked like for you, and what kind of boundaries do you think are the most helpful to set up?
I apologize to you guys when I got on Zoom at 1:03 because I wanted to go to the bathroom. Right?
Right.
Yeah.
And you know us.
I do that all the time.
Yeah.
And I know you. And I apologize to people when I get on a Zoom call and I'm eating peanut butter because it's 2 p.m. and I haven't eaten since 6 a.m. and I apologize for it. So apologizing for things that are just self-care and compassion is something I still work on, but boundary setting. So I've set boundaries around, I am a morning person. By 2 or 3 in the afternoon, I'm just shit for brains. I just, you know, I can't do it. I can't do it. And so at my last job before I left for the business, my administrative assistant, I said to her, no meetings after 3 p.m. unless you outrank me by 2. And at that point, that was the vice president and the chancellor. So if you're the vice chancellor, the chancellor, you can call a meeting after 3 p.m. with me. Everybody else, dude, I come into the office at 7 a.m. At 3 o'clock, I'm there to answer questions and fiddle fart around with my email and think about what I want for dinner is really what's happening at 3 o'clock.
That is so smart. And I want you to keep going on this, but it's like, know thyself. Know your strengths. We don't need to fit into the 8-to-5 box, you know? And I mean, John, this is so funny you're talking about eating, because I was telling John literally this morning as he was trying to eat breakfast, but we had back-to-back calls. And I said, eat. Our client isn't care if they're talking and presenting something and you're eating something. You know, this is the new world. And why would we starve ourselves? Why would we apologize? I love that we're bringing these things up and we continue to humanize them. So please keep going.
There's also another factor for me. And I don't want to just, but also as a person of size, there's shame around eating because you think that people think you're eating all the time. So when I bring out food, it's a completely different situation than when John brings out food. Because there's a stigma around, if I just ate less, I wouldn't be fat, or things. And so I'm constantly self-conscious about eating around people because they think I eat because I'm fat or because I'm not eating a Snickers 3 times a day, people, and I'm not in the drive-through with wrappers in my car. I'm trying to have an apple and peanut butter so I don't pass out in front of you. And I had an Ensure for breakfast. So I'm not, you know, and if I want to eat Doritos and cupcakes for breakfast, who gives a crap? It's my life. Like, I get to make those choices, and I have eaten Doritos and cupcakes for breakfast, not this week, but during the pandemic. But like, so there's also a shame and a stigma that comes for me as a person of size, eating in front of other people or asking for a moment to have a snack or those kinds of things. Like when I first started speaking, of course I had the throw ups, and Shannon would ask people, what is the breakfast that you're serving? And people would get offended and be like, why are you asking us what breakfast we're serving? And she said, well, Lynn needs protein before she gets on stage. In one speech, I usually walk 2 to 3 miles on the stage with my nervous energy, right? I have to have protein so I have something good to throw up so that I can go and speak on stage. I got to at least have it. But I was self-conscious because I'm, as a person of size, they're probably like, oh, she wants to wait. No, she needs peanut butter and toast so that she can function for the day. Or, you know, so boundaries, I've set boundaries around my time and my schedule. I've set boundaries around who can have access to me. I don't take unscheduled phone calls anymore. I've also set boundaries around my inbox. So when I first started my business, if you emailed me, I would email you back within 15 minutes. And if it didn't matter if I was on the wing of a plane, upside down, consulting with a client with no internet, I would scramble. And it didn't matter if you were a paying client or not, you got my full, undivided, massive email. So I set boundaries around my email and my phone. I don't allow clients to text me, for example, unless there's a true emergency or an urgent situation happening. Shannon is the one that controls my calendar. I don't schedule. And that's not to be fancy or bougie. It's because I'll screw up my calendar, but also she knows my boundaries. So she knows she doesn't want to work me deep into the night on a day when I've started at 5 a.m. with Pilates and other stuff. But email boundaries, I used to, when my business first started, I answered every email within 15 minutes. I mean, it didn't matter where I was. I would go in a bathroom stall at a conference and answer emails. And it was such an unhealthy relationship because I'm an inbox zero person. And people, I would give a speech and then they would flood me with questions or, and these weren't even paying clients. These are, you know, what Adam Grant would call takers, right? The givers and the takers of the world. And so I would feel guilty because I wasn't getting back. And so I finally had a conversation about worth and boundaries. And my doctor said, your inbox is full of other people's priorities. And until you realize that your inbox is full of other people's priorities, you will never be able to run your business successfully. You know, I'm here to serve as a resource for the industry, but I need you to have smarts about how to do that. And I've set boundaries around it. There's a way to approach people who have something to offer. And there's a way not to approach people that have something to offer. And we all have value and worth. It's just, I've had to set harder boundaries than even I'm comfortable with. I remember I was with my friend Maureen. We were at the Case District 1 conference and we were walking together and I said, Maureen, can we just go up to your, to my room and hang out? I just want to hang out. And she goes, oh yeah, but don't you want to go to the Thingamabobber and the free bar and the, you know, get some nuts or something. And I was like, I'm a little exhausted and people are kind of, it's starting to catch up with me. I said, I'm going to go to the bathroom and then let's go take a breather. And she goes, we'll talk about it, Lynn. And I said, okay. I start going to the bathroom and a woman starts by asking me a question about my session. I was like, yeah. I said, I'm just going to go to the ladies' room and you know what? I'll be right out. She followed me into the bathroom.
I was afraid you were going to say that.
Who does that?
And I literally put my hand up and was like, this is where our relationship ends.
Boundaries.
And Maureen saw that. So I come back out, answer the lady's question. I say to Maureen, Maureen goes, let's go up to your room. We're going to order some room service and we're going to talk. And she was like, I had no idea it was this bad, Lynn. I had no idea that these people would not give you peace. I said, I can't eat a meal. So I'm in there with Maureen in the room and I'm crying and I'm like, and it's never good enough. No matter how much of my give to myself I give to these people, it's never good enough. But people say, well, what gives you anxiety? Shit like that.
And the fact that you almost have to build this protective barrier around yourself, I'm feeling very deeply for you right now. And so I wonder, like, what do you think is the state of mental health right now in the nonprofit sector? What are your thoughts about it?
I think we're in deep trouble.
I agree.
I think there's a huge wave of resignations happening already. You know, we have more job postings on our gigs board than we've ever had. We have 32 openings right now. It's unheard of. I think people are not being tolerant around this easing back into the workplace. I think people are not understanding of some of the trauma that COVID or not COVID has caused on our mental health. I think if you're a manager of a team, I encourage you to be having conversations and doing more than just, are you okay? Because if you would have asked me the day before my nervous breakdown if I was okay, I would have been like, yeah, I'm fine. Let's go get some lunch. We're fine. I'm fine. If I say to you, I'm fine, I am not fine. And if I brush it off, I think we need to be more vulnerable in our industry about saying, every job is a stressful job, whether you're a gift processor, whether you're the VP, whether you're, and we got to take care of ourselves. And taking care of ourselves looks different for every single person at the organization. But I think we're in deep trouble.
I worry about us, but I'm a sunny optimist. And so I always think that doing things like this is going to just very slowly start pulling back the layers of what's beneath us. So by virtue of tuning in to this conversation, I'm so proud that you're here and that you're listening to this. I encourage you to share it with a friend or what you took away from this conversation. It's really about keeping your radar up and checking in. And I love the advice about going further than how are you and are there tools to use. And I hope you get some of those resources this week on the podcast. But yeah, I think all of that was excellent advice.
I also, I wrote a blog about my mental health.
It was great.
And it was torture to write, honestly. And I cried a lot and I couldn't believe how many people said, hey, thanks for even talking about this, or you made it safe for me, or, and all I did was say, here's why I'm here and here's what's going on and we need to talk about it. And I do think we're in trouble because I think I'm a realist. I'm not an optimist. I'm a realist. I have hope for it because we're making it safer and things like Simone Biles and Naomi Osaki. But we have so much healing to do from a pandemic, from racial and social injustice that's still hitting us from, I just think about, people who are we're all in the same storm, but we're in very different boats. And it is a journey and it is a lifelong pursuit to have mental health. I'm not seeing good signs from our industry in terms of flexibility.
I mean, I think that's so telling. And the conversations we've had too is we haven't stopped to think creatively of how can we reimagine our work. Mm-hmm. We're not even pausing to consider that. So Lynn, this has been amazing. And yeah. We're all bobbleheads. We're all affirming you. I wish we could give you a hug.
Yeah.
Your journey has probably just crystallized so many things that should be true of how we show up, how we lead in this way, And so I wonder if you have something today that everybody could implement to take better care of themselves or their teams.
Sure. I think one of the things that you reminded me of my younger self when I used to be a disruptor at conferences is what if we were a disruptor for our own mental health and self-care? What if we did something disruptive every week to take care of ourselves? So I'm trying to do Pilates. And my Pilates is now from 7 to 8 a.m. I'm trying to do it 4 days a week, Monday through Thursday. And by Thursday, I really, really, God, pray a lot by the time I get there on Thursday. But I wanted to do this for myself 4 days a week. But my client call starts at 8. And this is a client who is a very significant client. And I'm working with very hard. So last week, I come on and my hair is still up in its wet bun. And I've got on my Pilates shirt. I said, I wanted you to see me like this because I've decided to do Pilates. I know I'm crazy, but I've decided to do Pilates. The reason I pushed back our meeting, I could drive from Pilates back to the house, change shirts and talk to you and do my client work. And she said, well, I said yes. And I said, yeah, but I felt like I had to justify it, why I was moving back our meeting 15 minutes. And she's like, I think you're crazy for doing something active at 7 o'clock in the morning. Absolutely. I'm so proud you're taking care of yourself. And I said, I preach that we got to take care of ourselves. And yet I was scared to ask you to move my meeting back 15 minutes to do it. So every week on Thursday, I'm going to come in, roll into our meeting, chilling. And she goes, I don't care if you're still sweating, and if you need more time, you need to let me know. And I said, no, I want to roll right into my day. And she said, no big deal. And so do something disruptive to take care of yourself. So it was disruptive of me in my world, in my ethos, to move 15 minutes when they're paying bills. And what I found out is that client was willing to give me more grace than I even asked for.
I love that story. I'm so proud of you for doing that for yourself. And as you were telling that story, I just kept thinking to myself, what if we stopped apologizing to our people? And what if we instead circled back to them and said, I don't know if you're aware, but by doing that, you really helped me with self-care and with anxiety. And I want to thank you for being a part of that. I mean, I think completely disarm even somebody who disagreed with you making that change because they understand that it's a personal boundary and it's something that we have to do if we're going to continue taking care of them and of ourselves. Great story, Lynn. Okay. I didn't think it was possible to love you more, but I do. When people come onto this podcast and they are so vulnerable, and I know what it took, I want to thank you so much. Two, if you are listening out there and you are someone who is hearing your story threaded in Lynn's story, if you are hearing her talk about symptoms or triggers that you weren't even aware were happening in your life, please reach out and talk to someone. Please look for those employee assistance programs. Talk to a friend, a mentor. If you truly have no one, I want you to get on your email and type in Becky@weareforgood.com. I'm not being facetious. I truly want you to email me. I will visit with you. I will find someone else to visit with you. If I cannot, Lynn will visit with you. There is absolutely no scenario where you should be going through this alone.
Agreed. And you can reach out to me anytime. I will make time. I will make it a priority to help you take care of yourself.
This has been amazing, Lynn. Thank you so much. And we're just grateful for you.
Rooting for you all the time. If anybody else wants to reach out to you, what's the best way to connect?
Lynn@DonorRelationsGuru.com or at social media. It's all at Donor Guru. So trying to keep it easy for people. Thanks for having me back. I'm so happy to be two-time. I want to be like, you know, Alec Baldwin that has hosted Saturday Night Live like seven times.
Here are Alec Baldwin. Really appreciate everybody joining us today. Go check out the resources and please go follow Lynn on social media. Not only does she put incredible donor relations content out there, but she's a good human putting wonderful content out.
Awesome. Thanks.
Hey friends, thanks so much for being here. Did you know we create a landing page for each podcast episode with helpful links, freebies, and even shareable graphics? Be sure to check it out at the link in this episode's description. You probably hear it in our voices, but we love connecting you with the most innovative people to help you achieve more for your mission than ever before. We'd love for you to join our good community. It's free, and you can think of it as the after party to each podcast episode. You can sign up today at weareforgood.com/hello. One more thing. If you loved what you heard today, would you mind leaving us a podcast rating and review? It means the world to us, and your support helps more people find our community. Thanks, friends. I'm our producer, Julie Comfer, and our theme song is Sunray by Remy Borsboom.
Rabbit fans have always powered the We Are For Good podcast, but now Rabbit fans can get even more goodness and access by joining Good Friends. It's our listener support community for the We Are For Good podcast.
Good Friends comes with perks, exclusive episodes with John and I, including The Good Brief, our new monthly cliff notes of the greatest takeaways and lessons learned from that month, and exclusive AMA episodes where we answer your burning questions and tap our community of experts. Join now or learn more at weareforgood.com/friends.
We can't wait to see you inside. That's weareforgood.com/friends.